There will be three talks, and I'll go first, but we probably time-wise, I have a little more slides to summarize all three works that done at the University of Miami. So the focus here is that we have a multi-scale coupled observation. So my talk actually going to spend quite a bit of time looking at analyzing the ITOP data and also TCS08 and TCS10 in terms of how the things are divided. We have three different aspects of air-sea interaction tropical cyclones. My talk is going to be focused on the first part, and then I'll do some introduction material for the second and third. So the first one is focused on the TC genesis component that we're trying to understand how the developing TC versus non-developing TC. This part of work is funded by Omar Longfair, which started the TCS08. Then we are largely analyzing observations. The key is that if you want to understand the TC genesis, you really have to understand the non-developers. In fact, only a few percent of these cloud clusters developing tropical cyclones. So our focus is largely comparing the developing and non-developer. And then we'll assess what SST or ocean impact on genesis. And then the next components of the talk, which is the next one that Brendan will spend more time looking at the coupled observation and how we actually understand the data that actually provide such unprecedented data set for model evaluation. So we'll spend quite a bit more time on Brendan's talk about evaluating coupled model and then the plan for simulating a coupled simulation. So then the third part is the TC intensity. So how does a coupled system actually looking at ocean impact on TC intensity? It turned out to be quite a complex one. Jiayin Li's PhD thesis is going to fully address this component. She's going to give the last one, the three part of the talk, and then you'll find the ocean interaction and tropical cyclone is quite complex. So I'm not really sure this thing is not moving. It's supposed to maybe click on that and see if it does have a moving. So if you go ahead. If it doesn't, probably not moving. Okay. Well, that's all right. So what we do in terms of cloud cluster tracking, this is supposed to be a movie of whole October. So the general analysis method for us is looking at any given image of a satellite. So you'll find these cloud clusters that pretty deep in convective elements. And then each one of them will number them. And then lots of these green, the blue dots in indicating a credible system that might intensify into something significant. So we call the cloud cluster tracking. We track them in time. In fact, if you see the movie will show that lots of things that look almost potentially developing in something, but then eventually you will see Maggie comes along and Chavo comes along. So in a way, just moving, look at that movie, you're probably not going to see which one you can pick out on the movie to say which one is going to develop into making. So anyway, so maybe offline you can see this movie. So what we did then, to summarize this thing, on this diagram is a little more complex, and just bear with me. There's a lot of information on here. What we do is that the diagram shows you the time and the longitude plot, and this is going time. So the beginning, this is the ITOP period. Then the color on the left side is the vorticity. So mineralogists looking at a vorticity that related to tropical cyclone genesis, higher vorticity. So the yellow and the warmer color strips is why you're looking for something developing some tropical storms. And then on the right side here is a vertical wind shear. So the lower wind shear, the more possibility to develop into tropical cyclones. You're looking for blue color, that's favored. And the other one is looking for warmer color. So on this, we plot a lot of cloud clusters, which each one is all these magenta color. So then the one, the developing tropical cyclone, is black. On the ITAL period, I put it Guam here, the line there, so going with time. So basically this year, we've been waiting for something to happen near Guam, and it just was really painful to watch, which is not forming near us. So Funapi first one, there's a long period before that, but in any case, what you're looking at right now is that, okay, for a certain period of time, there's quite a bit of vorticity, and you can see this vorticity envelope there without anything developing at all. So tell you the vorticity alone doesn't do it. Then the next period, you have cloud clusters, but it takes long time before Funapi actually forms. So in this particular case, there's a low shear, lots of the cloud clusters, Funapi formed way, way later than we thought. So then next thing comes along, you will see Malacca's. Malacca's had a very distinct cloud cluster prior to that. So basically 2 to 3 days ahead, slightly low shear, and this one seemed to be a typical developing case. But then the next period gets really long. So this is the time we're watching for next development. We find a low shear, high vorticity, nothing happens. And then the next period, there's shear start letting up, and you see this lots of cloud clusters. You're hoping something developing, and I can't see if anyone, you can guess which one developed into many. But in any case, there's a lot of the cloud clusters never developing into some things. And then the mystery comes along later on, here's happens. And then, well, finally, here's Maggie. But in fact, there's a lot of low shear and a lot of cloud clusters. It was very confusing during the time. But one of them developed into a Maggie. And then Chava has another characteristic, in fact, it developed in a high shear environment. So how do we really sorting these things out? So make a long story short, we decided these kind of things you cannot really use in case by case. You have to do with statistics. So basically, Brandon and I had two manuscripts that we submitted on this particular one. So what we've done is looking at over last 8 years cloud clusters. So this plot shows you the longer the cluster lasting, the larger size, this is vertical axis is the larger size, then potentially you have a developing TC cluster. These are TC clusters. These are the clusters that actually prior to TC that are leading to TC development. So in terms of numbers, you'll see 1,300 something TC clusters. These are 2,000 something that leading to the TC. But if you look at the non-developers over that 8 years, it's 45,000 cloud clusters. So really, at the end of the day, it's only 5% of them developing tropical cyclones. So making a tropical cyclone is not very easy at all in the atmosphere. Everything has to be perfect. And all these times, SST is warm over the Pacific. So in the sense that if you're using SST to do TC genesis, you're probably not going to go very far. So what we do, so you look at the green dots is non-developer, and the red is non-developer. So then you put the entire domain, looking at the long-lasting clusters. You put a subdomain to say favor area. So no matter what you do, you put these diagrams and histograms, and you're looking at a range of the temperature from a lower SST to higher SST. The developer and non-developers are non-separable. You just can't separate them. Each time you have something, they either develop or non-develop. So my bottom line here is SST is not good predictor for TC genesis. So I guess my message to Jeff is not very encouraging. So don't waste perfect good AXPTs to drop into this stuff because you're not going to get very far. However, the ocean structure is going to be very, very helpful in terms of intensification. So once you actually have the TC formed, you drop AXPT to get a description of ocean to decide how much that storm will intensify or not intensify. That is more useful information. So I wouldn't spend too much time in TC genesis part. So next couple of things I'm going to say is more introduction to the things that Brendan is going to spend a lot more time on. And it's the ITOP observation, and he says 10 observation, that emphasis is on coupled observation, because this is the first few programs I can think of that I truly had a coupled observation, not just atmosphere and ocean alone, it's a coherent observation. What we do with this observation is that we first put them into this thing that is available, it's all written in the KNL. So if you actually looking at all the flat tracks, you click on one of the dot, what we'll have is that this is the EOL drop sounds, and then at the same time, there's another box comes out that have diagrams showing you the nearby Argo floats and our coupled model profile, forecast profile, and also the curves profile from that ocean nowcasting model, and also the AXPT sounds. You can compare each particular location, and this should be all available linked to EOL. One thing I do want to look at this observation in some ways that probably going to be interested in this. Here's how many sounds we drop co-located, drop sounds and things. I stratified, Jiayin made this plot, stratified by wind speed in terms of number of sounds, and stratified by SSTs. So if you look at the wind speed, we are kind of really rich in the lower wind speed range. And Maggie gave us a gift over 80 meters per second. However, during the field program, I was crying to asking you guys, please sample something between 40 to 50, and it ended up that it wasn't quite sampled as much as we would like. It was a little deep there for that range. But anyways, but you guys did a great job actually to making a lot of things happen, and I really do appreciate it. I'll show you later on why, you know, this program turned out so nicely to get a lot of things confirmed with model. Then the next one is SST. So you're looking at SST, where actually dropped a lot of the warm SST region. The cold week, we do have some co-located sounds, but even though we would like to test more, but because of the storm, we didn't really test as much as we would want. But great data sets overall. So then what we did is that you put all the co-located sounds onto a storm relative scale. So you're hoping to come up with a flux map for storms. So this is all the sounds from the Funapi, Malacca's, maybe color-coded, and then you put all the map. We covered really, really nice in terms of storm relative ground. So this gave us flux maps that we calculated. So based on this, we were calculating each storm's flight by flight. You're looking at air-sea fluxes. For instance, this is from Malacca's. Funapi, for instance, you have a cold wake, low fluxes, and then front and storm have a higher number of fluxes. So if you make a composite of these, and that would be fluxes from the Funapi, Malacca's, and this is Maggie. Maggie, highest fluxes really coming the flights really during the time that you have the near Iowa fluxes. So one thing I want to see to EE that if you look at the environmental fluxes, they're very similar to this form. So in fact, the key to Maggie is really in the inner core, if you're looking at heat fluxes. Compared to the sea blast in the Atlantic swarms, so the cold wake, it's not so obvious. This is mostly from the some storms that we did in the sea blast. But anyway, so this is in the process. We're making a lot of comparisons, the air sea flux calculations. So quickly go to what Brandon will show you. This part is the coupled model system. We have two systems. One is the original MM5 with the WaveWatch and also 3D PWP model. And then now we have a WRF 3D PWP, and hopefully HICOM are going to come along. A point I want to make here is that we use HICOM analysis to initialize ocean model. So even though it's the upper ocean model 3D PWP, but have this 3D structure from the ocean analysis. So quickly, I want to say a few words about HICOM in terms of analysis compared to AXPTs, because these data gave us great point to look at HICOM analysis. These are the analysis fields. So if you look at SST, HICOM SST is warmer, because mostly this is skin temperature. So then this is the line, if everything lined up, they're matching great. But if you look at the temperature profiles, just look not only beyond surface, they really doesn't look too bad. There's a lot of scatter, obviously, but the correlation is pretty good. However, HiCom do have a problem in the mixed layer depth, which is a lot shallower than the, they say this probably comes into many other ocean models, tend to see have a shallower ocean mixed layer. But T100 is always good, no matter how we look at it. For some magical things, I'm not really sure, but Jim, that's something you might really want to look into. All the ocean analysis product, T100 is good. It's a robust signal. So Brandon will show you this comparison, which is really neat, I think. Thanks to all the Apex flow team that provides them the data. So basically, on the left, there's a drifter of the floats plotted on the observed satellite images to see the drifter, where the drifter. In the model, you just sample the whole line of the drifters and see what it looks like. You can make that comparison, and Brandon will show you this comparison. And then the last one is Jia-Yin's talk. And this is one that I think it will give you something about this Earth interaction in the tropical cyclone is extremely complex. So what we're particularly interested in looking at is near cold weak stable longitudinal. What do they do actually to affect the storm structure? Because storm structure is a key to influence intensity. No matter how good ocean you have, if the structure is not there, the storm cannot use energy. So the question here is a cold wake good or bad for TC intensification? So EE probably say anything cold is not good. But you will see this one is actually counterintuitive. You'll find out later on, Jia Ying is going to show you. The cold wake in fact played a key role on the intensification process, which is a surprise. So couple of slides just lead you into, so Jia-Yin wouldn't have to do this introduction part, is that right before ITOP, we actually find the couple simulation. This is a Choi Wong, Typhoon Choi Wong. So couple simulation is on top here, and uncoupled here is the bottom. It looks very similar, have this tight inner core, so on. But the biggest difference is over the area that you'll find the cold, weak, typical cold weather area, we have less clouds. But then the uncoupled model has a warm SST, has a lot of clouds, has a lot of rim bands outside. The coupled model has less rim band, but the inner core is very similar. So that leads me to think, what is going on? Is this cold wake have anything to do with the storm structure itself? So it turned out when we actually did simulation, this is before ITOP, then what we have, the top part is the coupled model has a cold wake. Okay, the gray things is a cloud, it's a tracer. So what we did decide to do is that compared to uncoupled model doesn't have a cold wave. So we want to know what air is doing over the cold wave. So we release the tracer in the coupled model and the uncoupled model and try to see where they go. So they end up, when you release tracer at the beginning, in the coupled model, the tracer doesn't seem to go to free atmosphere. So stayed in the boundary layer more than the coupled model, uncoupled model. So uncoupled model produce a lot of rim bands outside the storm. But then in the coupled model, as you go further, you find that the unstable, the stable air end up pushing by the inflow into the inner core. So end up in the inner core more so than the uncoupled model. That's the time I realized something we are missing in the traditional tropical cyclone dynamics. So that means if the air is not totally unstable, they actually stay low in the boundary layer. So they travel very far and they pick up a lot of heat flux as they go inside. So the air becomes much warmer by the time they get into the inner core. So turn out the cold wave helps storm to intensify by maintaining the air in the boundary layer. So this is time that we decide, okay, then this must be something about this boundary layer that is causing this particular property. So then we're thinking maybe stable boundary layer is a great thing that actually happens in these type of storms. So this comes to the ITOP. So I promise to just wrap it up here and Xia Ying can catch out here. So sitting in Guam, thanks to Pete, they were doing the internal ties. I was sitting there trying to figure out, come on, gave us a storm. So then I draw this flat pattern based, you know, with Pete's help to say, okay, we're gonna fly this thing in, and then, you know, we do the spiraling flying, so hopefully we can catch the air inside on the cold wave. Well, what stable boundary layer, probably you guys thinking, meteorologists like look at the potential, virtual potential temperature profile, but simply to say is the air is much warmer than the ocean, then the flux goes reverse, different direction. So you turn out to have vertical profiles like this, the stable. Unstable is like this, so SST is a lot warmer than the air, flux goes upward. So in this environment, then we're hoping to find something. Do we have stable boundary layer or unstable boundary layer? What's going on in the reality? So this is a phenomenon gave us two sets of strings. One is that over the cold wave, that's where we find a group of stable boundary layer. Finally finding the holy grail. And here is the profile that is over warm SST. So you stratify that based on SST, you will see the gradient from stable boundary layer to the unstable boundary layer. So that actually confirmed quite a bit about what we did. So Jack is gonna give you some more. So really analysis plan as you request, and we'll have the TC cluster tracking running real time even now. So if you want to look at that, it's linked to the UOL site anyway, so you can get to there. So the high resolution model, we will making updates and put on the both website. Then Brandon's going to talk about this, how we were thinking about doing reanalysis. So thank you.
Atmosphere and ocean mapping. It's not use HPTs or SST. So the whole point here is to get the ocean thermal structure, determine what the ocean heat content is, not the SST, as we've seen before. If you have a TD that's moving over a shallow mixed layer, you have the capability to upwell cool water even then, and therefore negatively impact.
Well, that's the point. I think the ocean structure is extremely important once the swamp forms. But you can have all the, you know, warm eddies and things, but whether TC form or not, this is our indication, it probably doesn't matter that much. But once TC form, I'm pretty sure the ocean has a huge impact.
But if you do your regression or your mapping against ocean heat content, not SST, then the question is, will you see a correlation between the developers and the non-developers?
We can certainly do that, but we can have this discussion later on. My sense is probably not. Now, Genesis has so much in the atmosphere that it actually has a different way of looking at it. So in fact, 5% of these cloud clusters over vice majority the warm ocean. So 95% doesn't develop. What happens, right? So where are the ocean's heat goes?
Go ahead and do the ocean heat content now that we have the data sets and see whether or not that is indeed the case.
So Shu, I'm still confused. So if you have a stable boundary layer, then it's colder. Mm-hmm. And so we do know that cold air is bad with tropical cyclones. Mm-hmm. So then you say because it's cold, it's warm, and therefore it's good for the
right. Confused. Right. Okay. Let me just quickly. Jiayin will get you more details.
Right.
When the air is cold, the air is not cold. Air is warmer than SST.
Okay.
So turn out it's a stable boundary layer. So it doesn't actually vent the air into the free atmosphere, become wind vent. What they do is they stay low near the boundary layer. So as they travel out of cold wave. Because they're low, they pick up the flux as they go. And as they go, they travel inward and they continue to enhance the fluxes. So in fact, that air is slightly cooler, enhances flux as they travel into the storm. By the time they get to the center of the storm, they're much warmer than uncovered model.
It's got to be more than the boundary line. It's got to be that you're modifying the pressure field of the cyclone or something. Because otherwise,
the pressure field is the one that forces you to roll. Without that, then you're not going to actually do much. So definitely there for sure. Absolutely. So in a way, without that dynamic process, the air will not go in. The point is that the uncoupled model has the same thing. But this loads the air because it's so unstable, they're not going in as much.